I could choose just one. Morning, my name is Mark Elliott. I'm the student pastor here. Excited to share with you this morning. Of course, I'm very excited to have Kristen share with you as well. I'm sure you're more excited about hearing her also. That's okay. I'm not offended at all. She has a lot of wisdom to share. When I was told that we would each choose one proverb that's had the biggest impact on our lives, I was excited. I started kind of reading through the Proverbs again and picking different ones. Let me say, you probably know this, but there are some really interesting Proverbs that are out there. There are also some that I decided weren't the best for a church sermon. For example, I'm curious how many have heard this one. Like one who grabs a stray dog by the ears is someone who rushes into a quarrel that's not their own. I mean, that's good advice. I've never actually grabbed a stray dog by the ears, but I know enough to believe Solomon when he says, like, hey, that's a bad idea, don't do it. Especially the stray dogs I've seen in Honduras. They are creepy, I'm just telling you right now. Now, some people, they might look at an argument and think, you know what this argument needs? Me. But like, Solomon's like, no, don't do that. It's not a good idea. So not maybe the inspirational proverb I was looking for. Then there's Proverbs 27:14. It says, if anyone loudly blesses their neighbor early in the morning, it will be taken as a curse. I have to apologize to Tim and Tracy. They're my neighbors. And King George, our rooster, he does this on the daily, loudly blesses them. I mean, tries to bless them. But anyways, I laughed out loud when I read this because apparently Solomon understood something that we kind of understand today, that timing is everything. Timing matters. So even a blessing at the wrong time can kind of become a burden. Okay, I'm guessing you've probably heard this one before, Proverbs 26:11. As a dog returns to its vomit, so a fool will repeat its folly. I asked ChatGPT to come up with an image for this one. No, I'm just kidding, I didn't. That would be gross and not what we want to be thinking about when we head to Las Troncas in a little bit. How about this one? Proverbs 21:9. Better to live on the corner of the roof than to share a house with a quarrelsome wife. I don't know about you, but I'm not touching that one. I've been married long enough to know that some of these proverbs are better admired at a distance. But the point is that we'll continue to discover in the next couple of weeks that there are some really good things in the Proverbs, that Proverbs is incredibly practical. And it's written by someone who watched people and he noticed patterns and he paid attention to life. And Solomon, he saw that certain choices consistently led somewhere, that certain attitudes consistently produced certain outcomes. As Brett talked to us last week, one of the things that he said was very clear, that wisdom is learning to recognize the pattern that God has already built into life and having the humility to live according to them. That's why if I could only choose one proverb, it would be Proverbs 4:23, which says this, above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. Father, I pray this morning that as we look at this proverb, Lord, that you would unpack it in our minds and hearts. Give us ears to hear. God, we thank you for the anthems that we sang this morning. God, that you've set us free. And Lord, if we don't feel that, if that doesn't bring a smile to our face, wake us up and help us to celebrate the goodness of who you are. It's in your name we pray. Amen. So Solomon, he's not necessarily a young man trying to figure out the basics of life. Solomon had spent decades watching people make choices and seeing the consequences of those choices unfold. Think about it for a minute. This man had watched an entire lifetime unfold. He's watched children become adults, servants become leaders, kingdoms rise and kingdoms fall. He's watched people make decisions that looked insignificant in the moment, but they became defining moments years later. He had personally experienced the blessing that came from following God's wisdom, but he'd also experienced the pain of his own failures when his heart was pulled away from complete devotion to God. And after all of that, after all those observations, he doesn't tell us to watch our careers. He doesn't say, protect your reputation. He says, above all else, guard your heart. And when Solomon says above all else, he's telling us that this isn't just another piece of advice, another piece of wisdom among many. This is the place where everything else begins. And that raises an important question. Why would Solomon choose the heart? Long before I would start eating a Da Vinci's German pizza with white sauce and sauerkraut topping, I've already made several decisions in my own heart. I've developed an appetite and I've decided that I have 2 hours to kill waiting on lunch, am I right? And once that pizza is in front of me, the work has already happened. The pizza is just the evidence of all those thoughts and the culmination of those things. The pizza didn't just suddenly happen. It was conceived and planned and anticipated, eventually consumed after a very long wait for a table sometimes. But Solomon understood something that's easy for us to miss, that our lives are always revealing our hearts. And when the Bible talks about the heart, it's talking about much more than just the emotions. It's the place where our thoughts and our desire and our will and our commitments all come together. It's the source from which our words and our actions flow. And Jesus, he made the same point when he reminded that what comes out of our lives begins somewhere deeper within us. That's why it's possible to look right on the outside while on the inside our hearts are drifting. We can know the right answers and attend church and serve faithfully and still slowly lose our affection for the one that we're trying to honor, because Jesus isn't simply after outward behavior. Because when God transforms the heart, he transforms the life. So maybe the question that we need to ask isn't just like, what am I doing? Or why do I keep doing this? Maybe the deeper question that we need to ask is, what's happening in my heart? In fact, maybe some of us are better at preparing our Sunday morning appearance than we are preparing our Sunday morning heart. And this is why Solomon's words are so important, because when Solomon tells us this warning, he's telling us to guard our hearts, that we need to understand as well what he means by the word guard. That word guard. The Hebrew word that he uses, I went too far. Near, meh. I like sound effects, it helps. Let's see. That's Jesus, and then there's that. All right, we're on track, maybe. We'll go with that. This word for guard is not just a casual word. He's using this language of like a watchman or a soldier, right? Maybe not one that flies a helicopter, but a soldier that's standing guard over something that's important. A position that's there because whatever is inside those walls is extremely valuable. His job was to remain alert, to pay attention, to recognize that anything that was going to be a threat to what he was guarding, he needed to protect against. And one of the places that the Lord has been teaching me this isn't behind a desk, but it's out in my garden. Every spring, I walk out there in full confidence. I'm like, this year, I'm gonna stay ahead of the weeds. Anyone else feeling that? Okay, a few of us. Andy, I've seen your garden. It's amazing. I don't think you have any weeds. Maybe out in your yard, I'm just kidding. So I have a plan, I have fertilizer, sometimes I have mulch, but I have enough tools to convince myself like I know what I'm doing. And then life gets busy, sermons to write, youth events, family things, meetings. And I tell myself this, I'll just get to the garden tomorrow. And then tomorrow becomes a few days later, and then next week, then vine borer beetles are everywhere. And I walk out there, and it looks like the weeds have been holding revival services while I was gone, right? But here's the reality, they didn't show up overnight. They grew because I wasn't paying attention. And one afternoon while I was pulling weeds this week, the Lord quietly reminded me, he's like, Mark, your heart is like this garden. You see, pride doesn't usually just explode overnight, and neither does selfishness or discouragement, neither does anxiety. They grow quietly, often while we're distracted by other things. And that's why Solomon doesn't simply say, fix your heart. He says, guard it. He says, pay attention to it, and tend to it, and cultivate it. He's saying, understand the value of what God has entrusted to you. Your heart matters. But Solomon, he reminds us that there's something far more valuable than things that we spend too much time and energy protecting. Again, it's our hearts. And this is where I think we need to be careful. Because sometimes we reduce this verse to, be careful what you allow in your life. And that's certainly part of guarding our hearts. But it's not the entire picture. Solomon's not only talking about keeping the bad things out, he's also talking about protecting what needs to grow inside. I said Andy earlier, like Andy's garden isn't just healthy because the weeds are removed. But he has this amazingly huge garden, and it's healthy because good is being cultivated. The soil is cared for. The plants are watered. The gardener pays attention. And the same thing is true about our hearts. Guarding our hearts is not just about avoiding what's harmful. It's also about cultivating what is holy. It's about paying attention to what's shaping us, because whether we realize it or not, our hearts are always being shaped by something. And I've learned this personally. I've never decided in my own life, like, I want to create distance in my marriage, right? I didn't sit down and choose to allow resentment to grow like weeds. It just happened slowly. I began in my life rehearsing a story in my mind about what was wrong, and I focused on the things that frustrated me. I held on to disappointments. I started investing more and more of my emotional energy into proving why I felt the way I felt. And the more I invested into that story, the more believable it became in my own heart. Listen to some song lyrics that I wrote reflecting back on that time. It says, I was a dad, a husband, a man in a calling, but in that moment I felt none of it because I was drowning. Just distance in my chest and a story in my head that she was the problem and that the house we built felt dead. So I wrote a letter, I wish I could take it back. Full of accusations that don't hold weight or fact. Bitterness dressed up like truth I couldn't defend. Convincing myself she was wrong, this is how the story would end. But what I can see now, clear as the truth cuts through, it wasn't her I was running from. My God, it was you. Because in that moment, when I accepted all those false realities about my marriage and about my amazing wife, I was also running from what God was calling me to. I'd failed to protect my heart. My heart was following my attention. And what I repeatedly focused on began shaping what I desired. And what I repeatedly rehearsed became shaping what I believed. And eventually what I treasured began shaping how I responded. And that's why Solomon says that we need to guard our hearts. Because our hearts aren't passive. They're constantly being formed by whatever it is that we give ourselves to. Every day. Every day something is discipling us. Every day something is discipling our teens and our kids. The question is, what is shaping them and discipling them? Something is shaping what we desire. Something is influencing what we believe is important. Something is teaching us what we should fear, what we should pursue, and ultimately what we should love. Discipleship is simply the process of becoming like whatever it is we repeatedly give ourselves to. Let me say it again. Discipleship is simply the process of becoming like whatever it is that we repeatedly give ourselves to, whether truth or not. So the question isn't whether or not our hearts are being shaped. The question is, well, what's shaping them? That's what Solomon's explaining here. And to be able to explain that, the answer that to that question, pay attention to Jesus' words in Matthew 6:21, because he says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Notice Jesus doesn't say, like, where your heart is, that's what you'll treasure. No, he actually says the opposite. And here's what I've learned about weeds. Weeds don't need to be planted. No one walks into their garden and says, like, I think I'm gonna plant some weeds here this year. They just grow. They grow when they're given the opportunity. And sometimes the most dangerous things that grow in our hearts are not the things that we intentionally choose, but they're the things that we have allowed. I didn't decide I wanted to see my wife through the lens of frustration instead of love, but I stopped paying attention to what was happening in my heart, and the weeds grew. Our hearts follow what we treasure. And that's why Jesus doesn't simply tell us to obey him. He invites us to treasure him. Make him our greatest treasure. Because Christianity isn't behavior management. It's our affections reflected towards the source of life, Jesus himself. And that's why this proverb is both a warning and an invitation. It's a warning because we can slowly give our hearts away without realizing it. But it's also an invitation because God's not asking us to guard our hearts by ourselves. He's inviting us to bring our hearts to him, something that we'll do at the end of the service. We have a prayer team that would love to connect with you and pray with you. God, help me. Help me to build my affections towards you. Help me, God, to bring my heart back to you. Because the goal is to become people whose hearts are so captured by Christ that everything else begins to fall into its proper place. And the reason that this has become precious to me, this proverb, is because I've needed it, not because I've mastered it. And the good news is that God has never been interested in simply changing your behavior. He's always been after something much deeper. He wants your heart. So I've spent the last few minutes talking about why this proverb matters. Kristen is going to help us to think about what it actually looks like to live it.
always hard to go after him. He's got a lot of energy. If I could only choose one, it was a difficult assignment that Tony gave me because so many of the Proverbs spoke to me at different seasons of life, giving me the wisdom that I needed for that specific moment. But if I had to choose just one, which that was the assignment, that had the greatest impact on my life, it would be this one, Proverbs 18:21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. My name is Kristen, and I have the incredible, awesome privilege, Mark must have wrote this in, of being married to Mark for 30 years and serving alongside of him in student ministry. I also have the joy, for the first time in my adult life, of having my parents live in the same town as me. These three people, well, four, because Lucas is in here, so he could testify too, will know more than anyone else why I chose this proverb. You see, from the time that I was old enough to talk, I've been told that I have a certain knack for getting the last word. In fact, I like to joke that I was the very reason my parents stopped having children and the reason they've developed such a strong prayer life. Guys, my mouth got me into more trouble than we have time to discuss this morning. There were made-up stories about twin sisters who never existed to teachers who would then see my parents at Shoney's and congratulate them. There were elaborate tales about a pool being built at Christmas time in the middle of West Virginia with a slide, as if that wasn't enough, a slide going from my bedroom to said pool for show and tell because I forgot to bring something. Blaming my cousin for things that she couldn't possibly have done because she was never there and they knew that. Talking back to my parents, arguing, and really that's just a small glimpse of my childhood. Then came marriage. That's where I discovered my lack of wisdom with my words could do some real damage to someone I deeply loved. Proverbs 18:21 became a constant reminder to me. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. I knew my words had power. I think most of us do. But knowing something, living it or changing it are two different things. Why is it that we know what we should do, yet we don't do it? And why do we end up doing the very things we know we shouldn't? Sound familiar? I can relate to Paul, too, in Romans 7:15, for I do not understand my own actions, for I do not do what I want, but I do the very thing that I hate. You see, I knew my words were causing problems, but changing them was not as simple as just trying harder. I didn't understand fully why until I began studying and understanding this proverb more deeply. You see, the first half of this, death and life are in the power of the tongue. Well, that seems straightforward enough. I get that. But it was the second half of this proverb that took me a little longer to understand. The phrase, those who love it, comes from the Hebrew word ahav. It can describe love, but it can also describe desire or appetite. An appetite for things like food, sleep, pleasure, or even wisdom. The word appetite became the key that unlocked this proverb for me. Will eat in this passage comes from the Hebrew word akal, which means to devour, consume, feed on, or burn up. Those are some pretty strong words, and they sank deep into my spirit. I hope you know the feeling that I felt. The feeling of being consumed by the wrong thing and finally realizing the weight of it. So, if Mark and I ever have the privilege of sitting down with you and your spouse to walk through the challenges that every marriage will face, I want you to know we've been there too. We don't just do counseling. We've sat on the other side of the room as people who needed counseling. And we were brave enough to admit that we needed help and to ask for it. And you see, that was a turning point in our marriage. One thing Mark said during our counseling session that has stayed with me ever since, he looked at Dr. Fisher and he said, "When we have disagreements, I walk in with a squirt gun and she has a machine gun." That was hard to hear, but I knew it was true. I wasn't trying to hurt him, and I certainly didn't want to destroy my marriage. But somewhere along the way, I had confused winning an argument over winning my husband's heart. I had traded wisdom for control. That's when this verse began to make sense to me. You see, the Lord showed me that my ahav, the appetite or the desire, was for control. I wanted to win the argument. I wanted my own way. My desire was feeding that. I was being consumed by the need for control. The hard part in this is that didn't just start in my marriage. That desire for control was driving my words and actions from the time that I was a child. And it was producing exactly what Proverbs says it will produce, its fruit. This is where God's wisdom began to change me. I started asking the Lord to change my desires and to give me an appetite for something different than what came so naturally for me. And as he opened my eyes, I realized that my words had made our home a place where my husband no longer felt free to express himself. Instead, he just shut down, and the distance grew. That distance, guys, was the fruit I was reaping from my desire to control. And seeing that finally with the Lord's help clearly brought me to a place of repentance. I realized the issue was not just my words anymore or my tongue, but it was the sinful desire in my heart to keep control of things. Brett said last week, "Wisdom saves you from being subject to an unworthy ruler of your life." That statement struck me because I was there. I had allowed my desire for control to become the ruler of my life instead of allowing God to rule my heart. But as I continued to confess this to the Lord and cry out to him, he began to change my desires. He gave me an appetite for wisdom instead of control. And with God's help and a lot of practice, my tongue was no longer something I simply had to try to bite before speaking. But instead, he began changing my heart so that I genuinely began having a desire to listen, to try to understand, and to grow. Looking back, I can honestly say I had no idea my words were having such an impact. But that's where God's wisdom breaks through our ignorance and opens our eyes. Again, Proverbs 18:21 says, "The tongue has power of life and death." How we use our words matters. It matters to our spouse. It matters to our children. It matters to our parents, our coworkers, our neighbors, and this church family. According to this proverb, our words can bring death. The original meaning of that word, interestingly, is just what we think: death. There are no hidden meanings or softer alternatives. Our words can kill. Trust, intimacy, hope, encouragement, relationships, and even churches. But there is another choice. It's life. The original meaning of that word is rich and beautiful. It describes something living and flourishing, green, like healthy vegetation, hopefully like our gardens. Fresh and flowing like clean water, lively, active, and reviving. What a picture of the impact our words can have when our hearts are being shaped by God's wisdom and our mouths become a source of life. We can encourage instead of discourage. We can build up instead of tearing down. And we can refresh others instead of draining them. So much good can flow from our mouths when our desire is to walk in God's wisdom in every interaction he gives us. But our appetites or our desires are the key. So what do you do if you recognize yourself like I did in this proverb? What if we now realize our words are producing fruit that we never intended? The answer is not simply to bite our tongue harder. It won't work. It's to guard what is feeding our heart, as Mark talked us through. That's why Proverbs 4:23 says, "Above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it." You see, my problem was never my tongue. My tongue was revealing my heart. For years, I prayed, "Lord, help me control my tongue." But my appetite was for control, and my words simply expressed what I loved most. Until God began changing my desire, I could modify my speech for a short time, and I do mean a short time. But eventually, my heart would speak again. Eventually, God began answering a different prayer. He began changing the heart that was producing the words. Guarding our heart means asking God to examine our desires. We might say, "Lord, help us to see what we're feeding. What are we cultivating? Is our appetite for control or for being right, for approval or for comfort? Or God, do we desire your wisdom?" Proverbs 18:21 reminds us that our tongue has the power of life and death, and Proverbs 4:23 tells us where that power begins. It begins in the heart. Because whatever fills our heart will eventually fill our words. As we've reflected on these two proverbs this morning, I hope you've noticed something. On the surface, they seem like they're talking about two different things. One is about the heart, the other about the tongue. But these two proverbs are really telling the same story. Solomon reminds us that everything flows from the heart. Then he reminds us that one of the first places that the heart reveals itself is through how we use our words. Or in other words, our mouths often tell the truth about our hearts long before we're willing to admit it ourselves. And that can be both convicting and incredibly hopeful. It's convicting because our words reveal what's happening in our hearts. But it's hopeful because the answer is never to just simply try harder. God doesn't ask us to manage our behavior while ignoring our heart. He invites us to bring our hearts before him so that he can transform it from the inside out. That's the deeper invitation of Proverbs. When God changes the heart, our words begin to change as well. And that's what happened for me. So the question we leave with this morning is not, how well have I guarded my heart? Instead, it's, have I surrendered my heart to the one who can guard it? Have I invited him to transform what is inside so that what flows out, my words, my attitudes, and my actions reflect him? And if someone listened to my words this past week, not just on Sunday morning because that's easier, but at home, at work, in the car, when I'm tired, when I'm frustrated, when I'm hurt, what would they learn about the condition of my heart? Those are not questions to answer with guilt. They're just simply an invitation to honesty. Because our God's never been intimidated by the condition of our hearts. He already knows what is there. He can transform what we are willing to surrender. So as we close today, maybe that's the simplest prayer we can pray. Lord, show me my heart. Show me where my desires have drifted. Show me what I've been feeding on. And then by your grace, give me more and more of an appetite for you. Because when God changes the heart, our words begin to change, our relationships begin to change, and our homes begin to change. So may God give each of us in this room hearts that hunger for Christ above everything else. And may the fruit of those hearts bring his life to everyone around us. Let's pray.
As you go to the Lord in prayer this morning, let me leave you again, just repeat that question. What does my heart reveal about my relationship with Christ?